Previously on 24.
You helped terrorists acquire weaponized nerve gas.
I told you we were going to trigger the canisters once the separatists reached their base in Central Asia.
Dead, Walt! You got into bed with these people, and now they're threatening to use the gas on American citizens.
What do we do about Walt? You keep him out of sight long enough for us to construct a credible narrative.
Are you talking about a cover-up? Walt Cummings was complicit in David Palmer's assassination.
If we go public with Cummings, the credibility of this office will be destroyed. Mr. President.
What is it, Mike?
I think you should come here.
What's going on?
Just come here, sir.
Lynn?
What is it?
Yeah, I know you're busy, but I need to see you, please.
Oh!
We need you to do some work for us, and we need it done fast.
Get the canisters!
You have to cut precisely 10 centimeters from the bottom of the casing.
You and I need a place where we can meet.
I'll call you back in 5 minutes.
Logan's asked Jack to be reinstated on a provisional basis. He's been given full autonomy and access.
Got a possible intercept on Erwick. A man named Jacob Rossler.
He's a software programmer indicted for high security code infiltration. Never convicted.
Copy that. Federal agent! Rossler is in custody. I repeat, Rossler is in custody.
Answer.
Yes.
We have the identification key.
No! No! Is he gonna make it?
No. He's dead. Rossler was our only link to those canisters. Erwick's gonna call here any minute, and he's gonna expect to talk to him.
The following takes place between 2 p.m. and 3 p.m.
Hi, I am Evan Katz, one of the show's executive producers, and this is
Brad Turner. I directed this episode, and I'm also a producer on the series this season, first time.
Because Brad did such a fantastic job last year.
Well, thank you,
Brought him back as a producer-director.
It certainly was a delight working with Sean Astin. I think he did a great job. He's a consummate professional, and it was exciting to be involved with him.
I think it was an interesting choice. I think the premise was to fight expectation here, and he comes in a prior episode, and he seems like, you know, an annoying young kid, but he actually ends up being extremely good at what he does and unflailingly polite. But like the writers and directors on the show, as these episodes went on, his character got less polite.
That's right. This scene is an interesting story. This is actually reshot because we originally shot Sean really disheveled after the previous episode, and we actually shoehorned this in. And if you watch really carefully, you'll actually see that he's a little more disheveled in the next scene coming up.
Well, we moved the placement of the earlier scene, right?
That's right, yeah.
Where the key card, where he's mugged.
And this is a set that was brilliantly designed by Joseph Hodges to play as the
loft
area. And that phone call was also a pickup shot, and we shot at the back of the stage, which is pretty interesting because we'd lost the location by then.
This is Jack Bauer. Let me speak to Bill Buchanan. Now, this I remember writing this. This is a very odd situation in that we wanted Jack to go out undercover to meet Bierko's people, but because in a prior episode, Bierko had seen him at the airport, we were sort of backed into a corner. So we came up with this conceit that Jack intuits that Bierko's not going, and that's why he can go. So hopefully, if you get past it quickly, people won't question the questionable logic of it, and if you do it with conviction. But we just got past it.
He's going to need you to tech support him through the installation of that chip.
But what's great is that supplies tension. And then whenever I can find in this show to supply tension, whether it's legitimate or even false or suggested, it seems to work great for this series because it just seems to go from one shot to the next. And even if the audience anticipates that's where we're going with it, that he's going to be discovered and taken hostage or whatever it is, we can always use that to supply more tension.
I remember this was the first episode of this season that was a quote-unquote classic 24 dilemma and designed as such. Let me know if there's a problem. Talking about where we're going to be going with the mall and giving Jack an impossible situation. And I guess I'll wait to talk more about that when we get there. This guy, Mark Shepard, really interesting actor. He's worked for me before on other shows. Sweetheart, but very scary on screen.
Yeah, he's got a very dark edge. I liked him for that reason. It was always unpredictable kind of character. He didn't know what he was going to do and whether he was going to take it over himself or whether he was working for someone else. You never really got that feeling as to exactly what his duties were. That was originally an automotive repair shop, but we thought the motorcycle look was a little more interesting and fun, and we needed to have the right machinery, and that seemed to be to justify it.
Sir, we still need to issue a public statement about his death.
These two guys are always so great. We were very lucky with Greg Itzen and Martha Logan, Jean Smart. They're just electric to watch.
Conspiracy to supply.
I like to think they're better than the script. They make the script better than it has any right to be. But he tells such a story in everything he does.
Again, this set is a set, and a lot of people don't realize it when they watch the episodes because of how they had the interior-exterior feel to it. And Rodney Charters did a great job of lighting this and making this sell, but it's a set that we go back to a lot. And it always has a change of feel, and it's really great to shoot because there's all kinds of stuff to shoot through. And all the actors that work in the retreat are wonderful to work with and look at, so it's really played well.
Let him go out with some dignity.
Yeah, special shout out to Jude Ciccolella, who's been on the show now for God knows how many seasons, and it's always so interesting to watch. First he was an advisor to Palmer, then he was an advisor to Logan last year, and now he's back as an advisor to Logan.
Yeah, the tension that I talked about earlier works really well in Logan's retreat because of the behavior of the First Lady and the way Logan's so easily manipulated by his staff and people around him. It's really interesting to watch them interact, and I'm sure it's a great fun to write for.
Some of the staff are asking questions.
Well, there's he always tries to avoid a decision, and he always takes credit where it's not due. He's actually a bunch of really despicable character traits, and it took us a while to realize this, but it's really his love for his wife, which is, we're playing is very genuine, that really is his redeeming characteristic. If it wasn't for that, I don't know that people would lock into the character.
A violent thing happened to someone.
Yeah, the little history behind Logan's retreat is that it was modeled after a location that we used in the beginning of the season, which was like we had this stables and a big horse barn and beautiful, beautiful grounds that we did the original arrival of the Russian president. And then the retreat came out of that. So this building actually doesn't exist. There's stables and there's beautiful grounds, and we go back there quite often, but the actual building is fictitious, so the interior scene doesn't actually have an exterior.
Yeah, it's this great sort of mid-century architecture and decor. I wish my house looked a little bit more like that. And as I think Brad said, that even the exterior area there with the little pond or lake or viewing pool is set.
It's given us great opportunity to do press conferences and give a sense of the outside to the inside, which you usually don't get on a home set, a set that you go to a lot to try to, bag page count and make your days. This shot of Curtis, actually, when you look at it, these shots we did on location, but when we cut to Curtis in the truck, he's actually on stage in a poor man's process stage, and the background is being projected with video cameras. So we do a lot of that on this show, and it's interesting because it, again, helps us balance our days because, as you know, shooting on location, we go slower and we can't move quite as fast. So that helps.
Do we defocus the background on the poor
man's
process?
No, we don't. Actually, it's completely in focus, and it's a natural
camera.
The plates don't match the
It actually goes out of focus because the focus plane is soft in the background, but we found it better to keep them in focus.
So you use a shallow depth of field for those shots?
Long lenses shoot through the windshield.
No, that would be a wide depth of field. Wouldn't you want to crunch? No, that's right. It'd be shallow depth of field.
Yep.
That's the reason why I'm not directing this show.
You're welcome to.
No, thank you.
Please come and join us.
And someone asked us at the press conference this year, how do you feel about these other shows who are trying to do real-time thrillers? And I said, I hope they have an easier time than we do.
It's very true. It's something we always have to keep in mind. I mean, I'm constantly shooting what we would call in other episodic television, shoe leather, where we drive up to a building, we drive all the way up, and then I drive them all the way, coming all the way up this parkade, because when I put it together in editing, I'm never really sure where we're going to need to actually see the person make his way all the way to there, or whether we're going to cut away to something, because we do a lot of restructuring and editing, taking scenes from here to there, which in theory for a director and producer would be, you can't do that. Once you're committed to a timeline, that's what you want to do, but we do move it around.
This was an interesting attempt to write Kiefer playing a character who's fearful.
When it's out, clear your throat.
So it was a nice color for him to show, since Jack Bauer is not a terribly fearful person. I remember really trying to untangle the logic of what chip and what timer controls the canisters, and it was... it took us about 10 tries to make it as simple as possible, and that's not really all that simple.
No, it's as complicated as it gets, so what were you doing?
But the characters understand it, so...
That's what's important.
Right.
And I thought Kiefer did a great job of making this character submissive. I mean, these guys Jack Bauer is nothing.
Right.
And it's just, he knows he has to play their game and move in the right direction to make it work for them.
Our first little twist is coming up here. You're coming with us.
What are they doing?
How many takes it took to make that happen? The hits work and the slug and the throw in. And then we actually, literally, which we don't do very often, is we actually kept the camera in the car and practically drove out of the parking structure.
You're supposed to just give me the money.
So we're actually driving in the vehicle and there's a sound van behind us, and we're picking up the sound at the same time. So it was a pretty cool moment, production-wise.
By the time Jack gets close enough to be recognized, the tag teams move in.
So you can see here, Sean is a little more disheveled than he was in that scene before, because there was still some residual stuff from the way we shot the scene originally. But it's interesting. It still works.
You're talking about his sister having him mugged for his key cord.
Yes, that's right.
Now, has that taken place in the
altar? That took place in the previous episode, right. And it was pretty brutal. It was pretty big, but it just was a bit too much. It was one of those things where you make the judgment call, and it just felt like a little bit too much.
Right.
And if you came into this episode and hadn't seen the previous, you'd probably be hung up on that too much.
Right. We also have to be careful in these shows when you wound series regulars not to give them permanent cuts or gashes on their face, because you're stuck with them the rest of the series.
Which we've experienced and seen.
In any sense, the characters in the show have miraculous healing abilities.
That's true. And that's a given. That's, again, that timeline that if you actually obeyed to the letter of the law, you'd end up with everybody limping by the end of the year.
Right, and being stuck in traffic jams.
Correct.
People gave me the press release to give to you.
Somebody once told me there's no way you could do this show in L.A. because you'd spend the whole entire episode
in a
traffic
car.
Jam.
Believe this.
First Lady this year has added a really interesting dynamic to the White House.
That's great.
I mean, not that we didn't have that with Sherry, but there's something about the way Jean's playing this role that's made it really interesting.
Well, you know, I always describe Charles Logan, Greg Edson's performances like waiting for a train wreck. And now with the two of them, it's like waiting for two train wrecks. You just never know when these characters are going to snap.
You've made her so unpredictable because of her mood swings and her medication and whatever. It's just been a delight to
direct. She's generally been right. That's the great, you know, irony of the character.
They're all over this.
you know, her accusations are pretty correct, ultimately.
That's true.
You needed to go public about Walt's involvement with everything that is going on today.
I know you're disappointed, but I think it's obvious that Walt taking his own life changes things.
What's obvious is that this is a pack of lies.
They've worked very hard on sort of a fictitious backstory for their characters between the two actors.
Yeah, I haven't gotten into that too much. I haven't heard that.
Yeah, they have a whole
You don't care about.
They've decided they lost a child.
Ah, I was going to ask you about children.
Yeah, and that's sort of underlying their relationship, the trauma and the tragedy of that.
Which means it's your job to tell the truth.
That's interesting. I haven't heard that. We haven't talked about that. Probably because we hit the ground running when we shoot this stuff. We do it in 15 days, two episodes. So we're, you know, just trying to get the stuff done.
This was a neat
Suzanne's coming here. A neat
turn. Nothing so black and white. You know, she's all high and mighty. You have to tell the truth. And he says, well, the widow's coming. You tell her the truth. So, you know, we're always eager to explore everybody's flaws, hypocrisies, and layers. Layers is a more positive way to look at it, and these two characters sure have a lot of them.
Again, that's another example of our poor man's process, we call it, where we're actually in this stage and we're projecting the driving. This is, again, another example of it. We did this scene the same way. That background is projected against screens. I'm sure other directors have talked about that on the narrative here, but it's amazing because when I first saw this show, when I wasn't involved in it, I was sure that you drove everywhere and you towed the car and did it in the traditional sense. And it's just amazing. It's a tribute to the grips and electrics and everybody that set these shots up, how great it is.
Yeah, no, it really can look terrible when it's not done right.
And the thing from my point of view as a director is shooting this way helps me work with the actors. When we're on a tow car and we're driving around Los Angeles streets and there's police all over the place and cars are stopped, there's no freedom to work on performance.
You have to talk to them on a walkie-talkie.
Yeah, it's very difficult. And it helps everything. As soon as you buy into it, it helps sell everything because then you can concentrate on the narrative alone and not anything else. This is a practical shot. This shot that we're coming towards the mall is a shot that we shot inside the car. Again, what I did was the same thing I did at the parking structure. When we move into a location, I can practically put the camera in the vehicle and move in, and it helps cutting it all together and making it work.
Have we ever used a Steadicam on any of the shows you've directed?
It's a point of view show. It's a show that we try to do without a Steadicam. We've never used one.
It's interesting. And we have some brilliant handheld camera operators.
Both of our operators are really well versed in doing that. And also, they listen on headset to the dialogue. They pay attention to who we want to be in and when we want to be on, and we also pay attention to who's reacting to what.
Those guys are telling a story as well.
Exactly.
Guy and
Jay. Jay's on B camera, Guy's our camera operator. Position of the mall door.
How are you going to get the canisters? You know, it's always great in our show when we can have these different levels of understanding going on. You know, the audience understands. Jack is trying to dissuade them, so it doesn't happen. Jack's trying to convince them that he's really trying to do it to save his own ass. And this show is kind of rife with that dynamic. And whenever we can get there, sort of letting the audience in on the quote-unquote reality, I think it works really well. It sort of involves them in a different level.
Jack, we're moving the tack teams in to recover the...
Exactly. And then technically telling this story, CTU is listening to Jack and hearing everything he's saying and monitoring his situation. And he, in theory, is getting them to give information to CTU that needs. So he's setting them up for all of that.
Right.
And it's great because as much as this is difficult to play, everybody listening to everything, you need more shots, you need more setups, you need more time, it really creates rhythm and tension that just...
Wouldn't exist otherwise. Yeah. Yeah, no, if you, we didn't shoot it this way with the split screens, it's a lot of this could be very flat.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
We need to call the president.
And the technology that we've created, the conceits that we've created with the technology really helps too. The fact that they can mute it on and off when they're talking, so right. Jack doesn't have to listen to it all. It's a bit like a newscaster with a producer talking into his ear as he's doing the newscast and updating him on stuff. They can listen and at the same time.
I didn't really hear what you're saying because you were talking into my ear while I was watching.
Exactly. We're experiencing that now.
We really are.
We are in the movie.
Everyone on the show always looks so worried and distraught. So interesting that that works as entertainment.
Absolutely. This is like taking a break out of your life and seeing, you know, stop terrorists.
Right.
Know. Must be very relaxing for the audience.
It's a ride. So anyway, we're getting up on our mall sequence here where Jack will be asked to help release the gas in the mall. And one of the keys here is this kid's birthday party to visualize and identify innocent victims. And I have small children, so it was one of the first things that came to mind. Kid's birthday party. So that's sort of in the back of your mind here.
Everybody can relate to that has children, and that was really important to up the stakes.
At a certain point, I did something different with I'll wait till it plays out.
Servicing the HVAC units.
This scene is, while he's thinking, this scene is split between location and set. And
right.
I think it's totally seamless.
Oh, absolutely. I originally had Jack knock out the guard to avoid him being shot. It was sort of a little secret hero moment, you know, before the guy can shoot him, Jack knocks him out. But unfortunately, it ended up feeling like a loose end, since Jack is later going to be knocked unconscious and handcuffed. So he was killed.
Yeah, and those are the sacrifices Jack Bauer makes. We did shoot in the mall during mall hours. It was a great location. They were very cooperative, and we were quite surprised. We did the stuff you saw earlier, we shot when it was open and people were wandering around because there were just people walking in. But later on, we see the panic. That was done very early in the morning before the mall had officially opened.
So we didn't actually panic people in a real mall.
Well, it kind of dovetailed terrified. Because it did open while we were still shooting. So in a way...
Which mall was it?
We kind of did. The Northridge Mall.
Northridge.
Canister of
Centox nerve gas
in the Sunrise Hills shopping... No, it was the Sunrise Hills shopping mall.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
What's the problem?
Sir, the problem is...
You know, here's the dilemma. And I think a surprising one, which is that... CTU, or and Len McGill,
do you mean actually
argues for letting them release the gas. You know, don't generally see these kinds of dilemmas.
Initial reaction. Then I looked at our updated scenarios.
And
other terrorist organizations.
Audrey functions as the conscience here. And there's a neat moment here where Logan gets angry not at the terrorists, but at the decision he's being forced to make.
And of course our hero, the one we rely on, is completely handcuffed and can't do
right.
a thing. And that's a cool scenario.
Yeah, and you know, we know that Jack has been involved in situations where innocent people have had to die. You know, so you always try to say, okay, so what really wouldn't he be able to do?
And the beauty of Kiefer's performance here is that he maintains that, you know, whereas people would play the hero moment saying, I know what I'm going to do. Kiefer's looking around, trying to figure out what the hell he can do. And I think that's how our audience relates to Jack
yeah.
Bauer, is that Kiefer never plays the end game. He plays getting there.
The process,
yeah.
The dilemma. Yeah, look, he's mind is racing.
Exactly. And obviously he knows. He's read the script, so he knows.
Right.
But it's great that he plays the moment and he develops his ideas on screen, which
no,
really
no,
helps.
It's really, his take on this character is extraordinary and very disciplined. You know, I think a more superficial actor or performance would just make the decision and want to be macho about it. And the layers and the ambivalence and the tortured nature of the character, Kiefer really delivers on every week after week.
It's interesting here because of the way the real-time thing works. When the bad guy says, "Are you ready?" I had to have him run away because I needed more screen time to stretch out them turning the gas on because, as you can see, I have scenes playing in the meantime. So I realized that they cut it open and they hit the switch. But I couldn't do that, so I sent that guy off to do something, and we don't even know what it was.
Yes, but whatever it was very important.
Yeah, exactly, because these guys are still debating the situation. But we know they're there. We know they're almost ready to go, and that's what's important. So we just felt we had to do something. You'll see in the next scene, he'll be coming back.
All right. The terrorists are forcing us to make a tragic choice.
I love this delivery.
I'll go along with your assessment. Let them release the Centaux, but you better find those other canisters.
There's something very dramatic, very drama queenish about Charles Logan, which is really interesting. And, you know, politics kind of is drama.
Exactly. So he's back now, so he's ready to go.
Put your mask on.
All right, so here Jack has been clearly placed in this impossible dilemma, being told by his own government to kill all these people.
What's the unlock code?
Jack, the unlock code is Alpha Kilo Charlie. I repeat.
And it was very difficult to get this to be a clear dilemma to the audience. It's kind of a tortured arrangement. Well, they've got the gas and there's the code, but not the right code. And apparently we did it because I think people were affected by the episode, but it is a little twisted.
What really, really helps is the cross-cutting to the Situation Room.
Right.
Because they're playing what Jack's thinking.
Right. Interesting.
Maybe the remote's been damaged. Make it work, but I'll kill you. There's nothing I can do.
Here's an example. We had an act-out coming up that we needed to buy some time for. And we hate to do it, but we knocked Kiefer out.
Yep.
It just, we try not to do it very often, but sometimes there's just nothing else to do to explain why he hasn't made any progress in the 3 to 5 minutes the commercials are taking place in. But we try to take that pretty seriously.
I don't know. Should I kill him?
Not until we are sure. You know, here's a little what I would call a push, the notion that the episode is predicated on them needing this code and how important it is. And yet, because we set it up in the beginning, you're sort of also buying that the terrorists have another way to release the gas, which kind of doesn't bother you, but if you stop to think about it, it sort of makes what Jack has gone through slightly moot. But, you know, I think because the show is experienced in the moment and the dilemma feels real for the moment, it works.
And what I tried to do was play the fact that with the one guy's working on the workaround the whole time, and they don't really know if it's going to work.
Right.
And the tension of the fact that the guy working in the auto shop could have the same result. If he put the wrong wires together, it could be triggered there and kill the mastermind behind the plan. So I was trying to play that tension on both sides. That is this, do you put this in there? Do you do this? Does this happen? Are you sure this is the right one? And we tried to build that so it's a workaround, but it's not a sure thing. And I made this guy really nervous, the guy that's experimenting at the bike shop. And we tried to play that this is not the sure way is to get the code from Jack and make it work. This is the backup plan that's just there in case
it's just very jerry-rigged. I think this piece of business was critical to how to construct the set or
exactly
the location. Jack had to be in another room, but out of sight. He had to be able to see these guys and follow things, but out of sight enough so that he could get out.
Exactly.
So I think you would do the window and the window
at a
certain
height. Table so that it could bend a little bit and he could get the keys. And it was invented partially on set and was invented in a little bit in advance, too. But the the room that they dragged him into is on this stage, and the room that they actually cut the hole in is on location. So, again, it feels totally seamless.
Now those children will die within minutes. Look at them. Look at the monitor.
You know, all these visual elements, the mall surveillance cameras, the kids, it's all, you know, it was all part of the conception of this episode. You needed to personify these people, but I'm sure it makes shooting everything just drastically more complicated.
It does. Actually, when I went on the location survey, which is a way we take all the technical departments to look at the mall, I actually just took a video camera with me and did like 60 different angles of just the mall functioning. And that's what we used as the plates, because if you actually try to stage all of that,
oh, it would be crazy. It
would be a nightmare. So a lot of that playback is actual just footage of just generic mall activity. So we see that they're successful. And this whole action sequence was shot in this studio on a totally different day.
Right. We're coming up on a broken neck. So it's interesting, we have this scene taking place in all these different points of view. The bad guy's listening, the good guy's listening, Jack.
And as much as this seems to come off, I mean, this is so hard to do. We do every one of these shots practically. Kiefer is strapped to that leg, he can't move, he's doing all this stuff, and it becomes a nightmare sometimes when you're shooting it, because you actually have to do all of that in real time.
Kiefer's very, very serious about keeping it real, making it real.
What's happening, Jack? What's your status?
So the conceit here is that he's a little bit has been let out, but not the entire
right.
amount. So now we're going to pinpoint exactly where that vent goes and head in that direction, try to get evacuated.
And we're about to experience the place where my favorite shot would have been, which became a running joke in the production people. When the gas starts to get released in the mall, I had written a scene where Jack walks past a pet store, and there's birds in the window, and as the, you know, kind of the canary in the coal mine thing, the birds die, and Jack all fall off their perches at once. And Jack knows that the gas is actually getting out. And I was particularly in love with this image, and I was told that there was just no way to do it with actually killing real birds. So unfortunately, I had to abandon it. No way to do it believably.
Now, everybody that owns a bird is never going to watch the show again, Evan, just because you said that.
Yeah, we don't generally kill house pets.
No.
Just people.
But it was a good idea because it did demonstrate, demonstrate visually exactly what we want. We just had, first of all, there was no pet store in the vicinity. We would have had to dress the complete pet store.
It would have been a $100,000 shop.
Yeah, and it's, this was hard enough, this panic.
Right.
As I said, this was first thing in the morning before the mall had opened that we did this part, because we figured this would be the scariest for somebody that's just coming to buy donuts.
Right.
And, you know, if they walked in and didn't completely understand the scenario, it might be a little hard for them to take their donut buying trip.
Now, is this a practical location?
This is back on the stage now.
Yeah.
He ran right into our stage, and we built this with all the fan controls.
We're
and now he's running
with,
back out. Into
selling
the,
it with sound as well.
Yes.
The exactly. sense of the.
So we're back in the practical mall again.
We're coming up on a part where my wife actually started to cry.
Oh, really?
When I watched the show with her. She doesn't read the scripts or know anything about it, and it's really interesting to watch with her and see a layman's reaction. Little girl.
This replaced the birds. Is that okay?
I would have preferred to kill the birds as well, but we don't really need to dwell on that. I plan on dwelling on it for many years to come. All right, so here's just one of our horrible, grueling, real-time, this is very painful to watch, and we hope it turns out well, sequences. I think my wife, and there we go, and like this was a very nice moment, Brad, right here, where suddenly, you know, suddenly her eyes open.
The little girl did an amazing job, because a girl that age trying to grasp the whole concept was...
Death, yeah, near death.
That's big, and she did a beautiful job.
I think one of the reasons why these types of sequence work well in our show is we really do kill people you don't think we'll kill.
Yes.
Including our own regulars. And I think it really adds to the sense that anything can happen on this show.
It's true.
Michaels, Jack and I are going after the remote trigger. You're in charge.
This one turns out good. Thank God.
There we go.
Gather your team, you're with us.
There's, we give that moment to her and to Jack, and it's great. And then he moves on. He's a hero.
Yeah. It sure felt good when we were shooting it. We were, it's a big scene to do. We literally did all of the mall stuff in one day, which is, on a feature, would have been 2 or 3 weeks to make that work. And it's a credit to how fast we can move technically and how great our lighting department and our camera department is.
This guy had a great face.
He did. And it was really interesting. This is breaking into car scene, which we do a lot on this show because we need to go from one place to another fast. In the opening episodes, I was noticing that when Jack broke into a car, he broke in the back window and then reached through and unlocked the door so they didn't have to sit on the glass.
Yeah.
So I purposefully had the bad guy break the window. That's this funny. Way. So he had to sit on the glass.
Serves him right.
Exactly. Even though I learned from Jack Bauer how to break into a car and not sit on the broken glass when I do it.
This guy hadn't seen that episode yet.
Nah, being a bad guy, I guess you can sit on glass and walk on glass and do anything he wants.
Yes.
Rossler, or whoever he was, killed Kumar.
But again, this is like our PMP process, and I really believe works so well. I mean, I defy anybody to think we're not actually driving in the car.
Every once in a while, I'll catch something where I'll notice it. It kind of depends on what you're paying attention to. And
it's very important that the actors watch where they're going, look in the rear mirrors, and don't start to, just get into the scene and start talking. That focus really helps a lot.
And for those of us listening, part of the poor man's process is there are lighting people flashing these lights on his face, and we don't put the car on a gimbal, do we?
No.
Move it up and down.
No. Cameras are on constantly moving on dollies.
Right.
Give a sense of motion.
Doing that, sir, Bauer refused the order. There was nothing I could do.
No, I don't want excuses. Just do your job.
The set is really fun to shoot on CTU set.
Oh, yeah.
Big. There's lots of room.
It's Bond.
Yep. Anything goes on that set in terms of choreography and camera movement. And I really enjoy shooting there because it's a blank canvas. You can do anything you want.
Blackout on the ground there until we give them direction on a cover story.
What about the other 19 canisters?
It's a very interesting situation here. People are saved, thank God, but we originally had signed their death warrants. It's very odd, but very real. It's the emotions you would feel.
And, most episodic television shows would be, the whole episode would be just that moment at the mall. And we'd do it in two acts.
Go past
move on.
It,
that's how fast we burn up story, and you guys have to keep supplying more and more beats and keep us moving in the forward direction.
Get tired just hearing about it.
Exactly.
But, I think one of the revelations the creators of the show had was for a real-time show, you needed more story, not less story, to keep it feeling real and interesting.
That's true.
This is kind of a counterintuitive.
And then it comes down to, we do the big production pieces with the mall, and then it comes down to two people in a room and the tension and the emotion that's involved in that. And that's what's been the success of the show. We were able to do both well. We're not an action show. We're a performance show. We tell a great story. We keep the tension high. The performances are always first rate.
Bring it down to people.
Exactly. And it ain't all about the action. It's not all about the fourth act action beat. Action can be anywhere. It's where the story's taking us, what that hour is.
We've done shows where the action is the first act and that's it.
Exactly.
It just sort of You know, there's a, it's interesting. I'm watching this and realizing there's a lot of people watching and listening to other people. It's a lot of multiple points of views in our show. That's part of what it is.
Yeah, and that's all about layering. It's all about keeping everybody involved in everything. And I mean, it isn't only Jack Bauer that has a really busy day. It seems like everybody, including you and I, have very busy days on this show.
Very busy days. Well, as Brad and I are doing this commentary, we are finishing the last two scripts of the season. Brad is prepping the, or about to direct the 21 and 22, the penultimate pair of the year. We shoot and prep the episodes two at a time. So the directors are actually shooting little 2-hour movies every 15 days.
Sure feels like it.
It's really quite something.
Yeah. It's appropriate because I did episode 3 and 4 this year, and I'm doing 21 and 22, and it feels really good to be in that position. And of course, John Cassar starts the season and finishes the season. Does a brilliant job, and I just love to be his setup man.
Slowing down. He's stopping.
Sometimes on this show, the less said, the better. I mean, there's a moment where she could have had a pithy line, he could have had a pithy comeback, and just do it in lux.
Exactly. And never. We do enough. There's enough pace in this show that when it does slow down and take a moment,
right. You really
it's
notice.
It's really earned.
Right.
It's always an earned moment.
Interesting. I've certainly never written a show where cutting dialogue is such a powerful tool.
Yes.
As opposed to adding it.
Exactly.
We had to carefully design the mall sequence as well as this to keep the gas mask off our leads as much as possible because, you know, frankly, the only thing less interesting than watching a guy in a gas mask is watching a guy in a scuba suit.
Correct.
Just can't get emotion and depth to it.
Exactly.
We're taking the side. Go now. Go.
The audience has a hard time getting in.
Yes, you were followed. I don't know how.
Did you shoot material on the suicide or was it always completely off screen?
Completely off screen.
A very brief, cryptic, practical conversation.
Exactly.
As little said as possible. Report. You were followed. You know what to do.
Yep. That's great, and it's always great when the trail goes dry for Jack. It's always...
Which it has to 23 times
exactly.
A year.
Exactly. No, I couldn't see shooting that suicide on camera. It just didn't feel right. It felt like it would had to be on Jack's reaction.
I don't want. Yeah, even I don't want to watch
it. Exactly. It's close enough. And we originally didn't have the bad guys watching at the end. We actually added that all.
Right.
Because we felt like they needed to be right in the vicinity.
All right, Brad. Our date is over.
Oh, it was good though. I've never talked to you this much. Thank you, everybody.